The Drive Guys powering your afternoons Monday through Friday on Sacktown Sports.
Mark Kreidler is in for Kyle Draper today. Kreidler, you may owe a listener an apology.
Why?
A bit ago, we were talking about what Kings fans deserve. I asked the question, what do you deserve as a Kings fan?
Yeah.
And Megadeth Knight said, I deserve a title.
Yeah.
He said a number of things. He said, well, you don't deserve a title.
Yeah.
And he comes back and says, but I do deserve a title.
Well, you have one. It's Megadeth, obviously.
Huh.
Yeah. No, I mean, look, I want that for you. But if let's keep our brackets where they belong. This season is what we're talking about. Second half of this season.
Roy Seeley says, I just want them to finish at the 4 or 5 spot to move in the right direction. It'll show hunger. But the way they play and the coach, sorry, I can't read the rest. Something breaks down grammatically there. But I want to see them headed in the right direction. The way the play-in coach right now pray for play-in. I'm sorry.
Well,
a little autocorrect there.
It's a tough stretch. It's a tough stretch they're in.
Yeah.
But I get it. Yeah. I mean, no one wants them to, if they're.
The way they're playing right now.
If they are a play-in team.
Yeah. He's saying they look.
Yeah. It's a regression.
Right.
I understand. I think that if you look at some of the teams that have made big, big jumps, OKC is one of them, obviously, but you're talking about teams that are now crowding out some of those spots that you might have thought. And we all do this, I think, just as fans. It's natural to take last year's standings and say, if we get X better, look where we'll finish. But, you know, there are several teams that were ready to and did make really significant jumps. And you're right back in the soup.
Nick Towns says, with the current roster, actually he says roaster, but I'm smart enough now, I'm learning not to say roaster. With the current roster, the Kings can make 7 through 11, but not top 6.
Okay. Advocating for a trade. The way they've played lately, I think, skews this entire conversation. Because you're looking at a team, and it's especially people who close watch the Kings. Kind of hard, right? The last couple of weeks. It's like, they don't even look like the team I think I've been following. So why would I have any confidence? You know, and that's when I think, especially from a fan's perspective, you start saying, look, make a deal. You've got to shake this up somehow. If they can't fix it internally, whatever it is, then yeah, they outside blood's a great idea.
I think it's not just a matter of shaking things up. There's certainly some upside to that. But I think it's a matter of them improving defensively. I think something has to be done. And it's hard to do. For example, the Atlanta Hawks last year, or before they made the trade for Murray, pardon me, they were not very good defensively. And they went out and they traded, what, 3 picks and more for DeJounte Murray, who had been second-team all-league defense, a really good defender. So he joins them. He plays well, has some issues. He and Trae Young, I'm not saying they don't get along, but their games didn't necessarily mesh. But defensively, they were the same.
That's interesting,
so
right?
It's tricky.
I think we tend to do that again. We tend to kind of get centered on the idea of someone to trade for.
Yeah.
If you bring X in, it's always a fair question to say, all right, let's say your goal is to improve the defense and you bring in a player. How much does your team defense really improve? And those are the calculations that front office people get paid to make. But it's always, to me, it's why teams talk about trades a lot more than make trades.
Isn't that why people were jumping for joy so much when it was leaked out that Herb Jones became available? Because they were like, that's a really good defender. Why would New Orleans let him go? That was kind of the excitement of like, that could be a transformative player.
Yeah, he could be. And that whole thing was weird. I don't know where. I know a guy named Matt Moore said the Kings are expected to pursue him, something like that. But I haven't seen anything that would suggest New Orleans has any interest whatsoever in entertaining offers for him. So
it's a competitive
worth
team.
Keeping an eye on. But yeah, it's like that kind of doesn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah. So it's never quite as easy. I don't know that you're going to solve that issue with a single move. You can get a little bit better defensively.
Yeah, that's why
you have a number of players that are subpar defensively. You can't overcome it with a single trade.
To me, Mark Kreidler in for Kyle Draper today. I think in a perfect world, the Kings would add a 3-and-D wing, someone who can make shots and can be a really good defender at the wing position, maybe guard a couple positions, but a guy who's definitely a good defender and a backup guard with some size who can defend and hopefully isn't a total loss offensively.
Is Doug Christie available?
I saw him there last night.
So yes, yes is the answer. He's right there. Yeah. No, you're right. I mean,
but again, that's
3&D guys.
But
those are tough to get.
It's not like other teams. Like, what do you guys need? How can we help you? Yeah. You know.
But at least you know this conversation is at least kind of in the framework of the front office, which is from all we can tell, pretty much on the same page. They sort of know what they're looking for. I only mentioned that because you were discussing the Lakers situation a little bit earlier this afternoon, and it sounds way more chaotic. Like maybe LeBron is making suggestions that are being followed or pursued.
You can, if you watch them, and they're on all the time. It's hard not to watch the Lakers. Like, oh, the Lakers aren't again. But you can almost literally hear the clock ticking. Or you can almost literally see the hourglass running out on them.
Yeah.
And it's inevitable.
Sure. And it isn't just LeBron, right? I mean, Anthony Davis is like, any minute now.
Uh-huh.
We don't know what will happen, but it will happen any minute. But with LeBron, yeah, it's a much bigger countdown. And so there's that pressure, that added pressure. It's not just we're the Lakers. It's also we thought we had a window here. How do we keep that window open for as long as possible? And also, what if it's closing faster than anyone wants it to? The urgency to make sometimes crazy deals gets ratcheted up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly, I mean, at least with the Kings, my perspective is that the Kings front office is pretty unified and generally thinking the same thoughts about the types of players they would acquire if they could.
Mm-hmm.
And Jerry might be right. It might be something that's a little bit, not under the radar, but not necessarily a headliner deal.
Jalen Smith. I think he would help you defensively, and he'd help you with your front court versatility, and you'd be better. If that's all you did, I don't know that you're necessarily going to be, you know, like, hello, 3 seed or better, but he makes you better. And if it's just one of a couple moves you make,
well,
it's better than sitting there going, oh, there was nothing available to us.
Let's just assume that some teams in the Western Conference are going to get better by the deadline.
That's the other thing. You're right. That's a great point.
Yeah. I mean, some of it is just we've got to keep up with the Joneses.
And that, to me, is the answer to the mystery here. What's wrong with the Kings? They're about as good as last year, and they've got the same players. But I think the answer is, yes, the Kings didn't see any big opportunities to improve in the offseason. They did a few things that were designed to help them improve. They haven't really worked out yet. They still could. But other teams made some big moves. So it's like, in a vacuum, wow, what's wrong? But you got to look at the big picture, look at what other teams did to get better. And that's a great point you raise. At the deadline, other teams are going to, no matter what you think about what's available, what you should do, other teams are going to be doing things.
Yes, it's going to happen. It happened right in front of you. And some of it may happen sooner rather than, you know, deadline or day after deadline, but it'll happen. And, you know, the Kings are at that point, Whitey, where a lot of the offseason calculation was, and this isn't just fan talk, I think, in the front office. It was also, look, we have this many players who are basically still young in their careers. We can assume we'll get better strictly based on their career rise. You know, if these guys each take half step or full step forward, you get better just by having the same guys. And not every team can ever say that. And, you know, right now, the moment that we're in right now, it doesn't necessarily feel like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's the calculation.
Yeah, we'll get to the Detroit Lions and how they could, and I don't really like talking about it. That's one reason we put it off, how they could bring this 49ers season to a disastrous end. And we'll look at the Lakers. Mark Crowther just referenced it. The Lakers, their silly plan to return to the throne, the NBA throne. Also, we'll get your calls when we come right back here. Drive Guys, Sacktown Sports.
It took all 60 minutes, but the 49ers found a way to dispose of Green Bay.
1:30 and rolling to play in the game. Purdy takes it, hands off to McCaffrey off the left side, breaks a tackle, touchdown!
Next up in their quest for another Super Bowl title is a major roadblock with the Lions. San Francisco hosts Detroit Sunday at 3:30 in the NFC title game.
You can hear all the action right here on Sacktown Sports and SacktownSports.com.
Live and local, it's the Drive Guys. Watch the show on YouTube.com/SacktownSports1140.
Or listen on the Sacktown Sports app.
Mark Kreidler in today. Is it kind of weird being on YouTube doing a radio show?
A little bit weird. Is the show over, by the way?
No.
Oh, no, okay.
I get it.
That's a throwback reference.
Yeah. We have someone, Cameron, saying, such a pleasure to see Rise Guys back together again. Miss these guys so much. Thank you. Lots of kind words. Whatever. We're trying to do a show here.
Yeah.
Okay?
And it's, you know, I don't want to say that's over, but it's called the Drive Guys now. So, you know, it's Kyle Draper's chair.
Yes. Actually, yeah, I guess it is.
Does he sit in this one ever?
Yeah, but I think he sits more over here. Okay. But he'll be back. Kyle Draper back tomorrow. Jay Pangalinan, I believe.
Hi, Jay.
Us fans may never truly know why the first half has gone this way, but the second half should be an opportunity to build up. That definitely is an opportunity. Yeah.
Yeah, and we could be surprised by what happens over the next couple of weeks on this trip. It's just, it's really just about how they've been playing right now. And in the here and now, they've played really weird and losing basketball. So, in some ways, last night was. It wasn't a win the way they normally win games, but it was a routine win.
Harrison Barnes last night scored 32 points. I did not stay for the post game. To my knowledge, he did not speak to the media afterwards. I found that a little unusual. And I'm not saying what's wrong with him, but that, again, because I didn't see any. I saw who talked last night. Malik talked and coach talked, of course. And there's no obligation to have three. Sometimes have two. But I just thought Harrison Barnes didn't talk to media after Harrison Barnes, who's been heavily criticized. He has this bust out game and we don't hear from Harrison Barnes. I thought that was unusual.
It's also a moment that at least theoretically he'd enjoy. You've had a great game.
Yeah.
Come out and talk about your great game.
And it's possible that just he came out and none of it was deemed worthy of people posting anywhere. I doubt that, but anyway.
I doubt it.
I wonder what he had to say.
Yeah, they're just in a weird place right now. They are. And I know. And last night's win was much needed, but I'm not sure how much it changes things. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say this. I'm not going to, but I'll tell you what I was going to say, and I'm not going to say it because we've said it so many times. We're going to learn a lot about this team on this road trip. I feel like I've said it 15 times this year, and they haven't even been on 15 road
Good
trips.
News. The road trip is here.
Yeah.
It's an unusual trip. I mean, you know, four-game trip, yeah, five games is a lot. Seven's crazy. That doesn't happen very often, and this is their – I mean, most teams get one really long trip in the year. I'm not sure every team gets seven. It's a tough, tough trip. It's tougher when you're not playing well. So that's their challenge right now.
Do you know they have a game on Super Bowl Sunday against your team?
What? When? At like 7:30 in the morning?
I think it's noon our time.
Yeah, okay.
I'm well aware because it's going to be a logistical
Well,
hurdle.
Yeah, and that's fine. I don't mean to come, we have to cover. Yeah, I'm just saying I think it's a little unusual.
It is strange.
Yeah.
I do remember. I'm,
look, I think it's stupid, okay? For Oklahoma City to schedule a game on Super Bowl Sunday. I'm sorry.
I'm positive you blame Oklahoma City. I'm positive that the Kings have played on Super Bowl Sunday in Sacramento in previous years.
I know they have. I remember, and I think it was the Steelers-Cardinals Super Bowl, but I could be wrong, but they played Oklahoma City. I remember.
Did they really?
Yeah.
See, it comes back around to you.
Yeah, so OKC's like, we'll show you.
Yeah. So that's one of those get on the court, get off the court type games. And that's the kind you cannot boot.
I mean, it's nice for us, right? You got the whole day now rather than sit there and watch the Super Bowl pregame show.
Yes.
Watch some Kings basketball.
Yes. Yeah.
Wait, you're saying you don't want to hear about the backup linebacker for Kansas City who has overcome these incredible obstacles?
I do.
They won't even be getting to that when we're, you know, that early. It's all the, hey, and coming up after the game.
Yeah.
Right here on, I don't know, who has the game this year?
It's CBS.
CBS has it. The Equalizer season premiere.
You know what that means? That actually means, because CBS has the game, that means that Sunday's Niners-Lions game probably will be Greg Olson's last game as the color analyst working with Kevin Burkhardt on Fox's broadcast, because it'll be Tom Brady next year.
Ooh.
So this could be it. This could be Olson's swan song.
Hmm. By the way, did you hear the Tom Brady story based on what Brock Purdy said last week?
Mm-mm.
You didn't hear this?
No.
It's amazing to me. Nick Wagner wrote about it. We talked about it a little bit yesterday. For some reason, no one is talking about this, Crides. And maybe you tell me, you're the journalist. Maybe it's not that big of a deal. This is what Brock Purdy said to actually, this is what Nick Wagner wrote. Pardon me. There's a quote in here, but Nick Wagner, ESPN.com, quote, early in the offseason, so before this year, Niners coach Kyle Shanahan sat down with Purdy and assured him that if he was healthy, he would be the starter unless Brady wanted to play one more season for his hometown Niners.
Oh, yes, I did read it.
Purdy said, that meant so much to me. I remember him saying, if we can get Tom Brady, we're going to try to get him. And I was like, yeah, he's the GOAT. I get it. Isn't that, how come no one's talking about that?
I think because it was never remotely close to being a possibility. When Brady stepped away, the only thing that got people curious was when he told Fox, yes, I'm agreeing to the deal that we already agreed to, but I don't want to start for a year. I want to wait one more year before I do the broadcast thing.
He also posted something on social media not long ago indicating he nearly unretired in May. Brady did, but it's not clear whether that was a joke or what that was. But he did say, indicate he nearly unretired.
Yeah. You got to remember going back to that time that although they felt comfortable that Purdy would be ready, they didn't know it for sure.
Right.
Well, I don't know that bringing in Brady actually solves your problem, but it's interesting that, Purdy even really acknowledged it. That's the kind of thing that I would almost say, I don't know. I never heard that.
Yeah, I'm sure he...
Instead of, yeah, that was cool.
Yeah.
Tom Brady or
he
me.
Probably didn't need to say that, huh? I was like, oh, I probably shouldn't have really gone there.
Yeah. Yeah. You didn't have to say that part out loud, but okay.
Imagine the QB room in August of Tom Brady, Brock Purdy, Trey Lance, and Sam Darnold all walking into camp together with the Niners.
Yeah. It's the Niners' ability to like make weird pursuits of players seems to transcend administrations head coaches.
That leads me to believe that Trey Lance's number was up a long time before any of us knew it.
Yeah, I believe so.
So many wasted hours over the summer talking about Lance and Darnold. Oh my God, you're bringing me back to sad times.
And what a massive concession. You mean that's the existing front office saying, all right, we're writing it off. We were wrong. We traded capital for this guy. We invested a huge amount of money in this guy. He got hurt, but he's not the guy. That's a huge concession that a lot of franchises would not make.
Mm-hmm.
Would not make, Dallas. And so it's not just that Purdy was, came on. He made the decision easier. Yeah, of course he did. But that's still a big move on Trey Lance.
Yeah. Kyle Shanahan got so lucky. Well, we drafted him, right?
Sure. Yeah. They had already contacted him about possibly signing him as an undrafted free agent.
Yeah, but that's so did some other teams. That's how close
they were. Yes.
Yeah, Minnesota supposedly.
Yeah, that's, of course, how that's close all they the were teams,
right? Oh, well, we were very interested in him.
Sure. Yeah. he was very high on our board. And we told you that, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's so crazy. Did you see that graphic during the game that showed of the 8 quarterbacks remaining, 7 were first round picks and Brock Purdy?
Yeah. Yeah.
Incredible.
Here's the only way, Crides, I see Detroit winning. Maybe not the only way, but this is their probably truest path to actually winning this game. And it has to do with the fact that the 49ers run defense has been, at times kind of iffy, and the Lions have a very potent rushing attack, and they have a very good offensive line when it comes to run blocking, and they have Jahmyr Gibbs and they have David Montgomery. And I said last week, and I know this is, it doesn't make me Vince Lombardi or anything, it's basic football, but I said, wow, if Green Bay can run the ball, the 49ers could be in trouble. Well, you were there, you saw it.
Yeah.
Packers, as they have been over the last several weeks, they ran the ball down the 49ers' throats.
Yeah.
And if Detroit does that again this week, it could be another nail biter.
To me, the sort of swing there, the pivot, and I agree with you completely. In fact, watching the game in person and not really seeing the stats, I actually thought the Packers ran for way more yardage than they did because they were so willing to run early in possessions and because Jordan Love seemed like he was, elusively out of the pocket sort of whenever he needed to be. And that's when you sort of see, well, Armstead just got back on the field. Mm-hmm. He's obviously... Under the circumstances, he played really well, but he's not all the way back. And their pursuit wasn't exactly what you would have imagined. The Lions can run the ball all day if they want to. But if the 49ers offense clicks, Detroit will get pulled out of that run game fairly early. And then they'll ask Jared Goff to do it, and it becomes a different game.
If I'm Jared Goff, which I'm not, if I'm Jared Goff and that happens, I'm looking for number 20, Ambry Thomas. Yeah. And I'm going after him every single play that I can that he's on the field.
Packers sure did.
Yeah.
And you know that
– it was embarrassing.
Well, and it was just, you know, sort of reminded Niners fans that they looked for cornerback help for a lot of this season without finding it. They looked and looked. And so they're going to throw him out there because that's their option, and that's what they have to do. And by the way, Nick Bosa will be going opposite Penei Sewell on the Tigers O-line. That's a great matchup.
Yeah.
To watch. If you like that kind of stuff, that's a great matchup to watch because a lot of play results will be decided right there.
I came away from that game, among other things, like a lot of fans, I was like, 49ers didn't get to the quarterback. And then I saw the numbers that they actually pressured Love. They got pressure on him on 40% of his dropbacks, which isn't terrible. You were there.
Yeah.
I mean, was the 49ers pass rush, was it effective or
no.
not as effective as it should have been?
No, and in fact, partway through the game, it was easy. It was hard, or I should say it was hard watching the game not to wonder, why aren't they just – they got to bring somebody extra once in a while. They were trying to get there with four most of the game. In the fourth quarter, they got extremely creative and risky. It's obviously risky, especially against a mobile quarterback like that, to bring extra help, but they started bringing some extra help. And I think that factored on at least one of Greenlaw's two picks. The other was, you know, the last pick. You saw Jordan Love tried to do something that Brett Favre tried to do back in the day with about the same result.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the sidearm falling down, slinging back across the field. That's a tough pass to throw.
I'll never forget this about that game. And it's totally understandable. It's not a criticism. But as you said, Jordan Love spent most of the game, you know, he was just slinging it. And you could see on TV, I don't know how much you could see where you were, but you could see his face like, that guy is locked in. Mm-hmm. He was calm. That last possession, though, where he ended up throwing the interception, you could see it in his eyes. Oh, he's terrified, which I would be too.
Big moment.
But yes,
yeah,
yes.
Big moment. The guy they're playing on Sunday.
They thought they were going to win the game, and I was like, uh-oh, we're probably going to lose.
Right. You suddenly realize that you have to go length of the field, basically.
Yeah.
And that changes the dynamic a little. A guy they're playing Sunday is not going to feel that. A guy they're playing Sunday has been in a few of these. So it's much more about whether the 49ers can take the Lions out of their run game. And they can do that offensively by putting up early scores and forcing the Lions into a catch-up game.
Mm-hmm.
If the Lions are allowed to run for three quarters, you're in trouble.
How many times have you been to Detroit?
Three now, I guess. Yeah. Well, three recently. Back in the day, I went to Detroit a lot, but I covered the Lions in the Silver Dome. It doesn't count.
What happened? And I don't mean anything bad, but how nuts do they go if they win this game in Detroit?
You should have seen downtown. We saw scenes of downtown after last weekend. It was crazy, absolutely crazy, and it was snow covered. So it would be hard to calculate what would happen. It would be.
We don't have to worry about it, right?
Absolutely epic.
Don't have to worry about it.
Sure.
They're due for some good fortune. I think we can say that. But the 49ers, we don't know about Debo Samuel. If Debo plays, I really think the 49ers have enough to force the Lions to be playing catch-up football, and that's not their favorite.
Coming up, we'll see what Mark Kreidler thinks of what people are calling, at least I'm calling it, Shanahan's blunder. He got away with it, but what a blunder. It's next year with the Drive Guys on Sacktown Sports.
Your afternoon home for Kings Talk and so much more. The Drive Guys on Sacktown Sports.
Mark Kreidler is in today. Thank you again, Mark Kreidler, for coming in. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for Kyle allowing it.
Yeah.
Did he? He probably doesn't even know, does he?
He has no idea.
Yeah.
Actually, I did. He said, who's coming in? I said, Mark Kreidler. And I kid you not, he said, who? So
we're off.
Mark Kreidler, mister. Okay. Yeah. What do you think of Shanahan's blunder, Mark Kreidler?
Which one?
The way he took his sweet time setting up a long field goal at the end of the first half that was blocked. A lot of people have said he should have been more aggressive there and given his team a chance to maybe punch it into the end zone, get some more points.
Well, I mean,
they're calling it Shanahan's blunder.
They're not. The conditions were bad, I can tell you that. Not that they're any better for a field goal attempt in that situation, but I think he was afraid to put it in the air with the conditions, which, by the way, after the half, there was the rain fell. It looked more dramatic on camera than it was in person. The first half, though, was legit, you know, soaking. So I'm guessing that the weather factored into his decision some there.
In fairness to Shanahan, he wanted to get the ball back to start the second half, where he then also punted to begin the second half.
Right.
That's what killed him.
I get that whole thing.
That's what killed him was
possessions.
The three and out.
Two for one.
As Kyle noted, the three and out to start the second half is a killer. And I told you earlier how loud it was in the fourth quarter. At the start of the fourth quarter was the quietest I've ever heard it inside Levi's. Because there was no momentum whatsoever. The third quarter didn't go according to plan. The Packers just looked fairly comfortable playing football. Their footing was good. I heard Shanahan come out after the half and mention the footing. Packers weren't having a lot of slippage issues. And they were running the ball pretty well, and they just sort of looked like they're kind of in position to handle this game if they can keep it all together. But they are the youngest team in the NFL, and things happen.
Like you, like a lot of people with us, I've watched 49er games for many, many years. And, you know, you watch a game and it reminds you of a game you've seen in the past. And all the games that I was being reminded of watching that game, all were games that the 49ers lost. You know, like the 1983 NFC title game and the 1987 game where Joe Montana got benched and they lost to the Vikings. And, you know, these disastrous, like those games where it's like, what is happening? And it just felt that way the whole game.
Yeah.
And then when Carlson, you know, bless his heart, when the kid yanked that field goal wide left, like, well, I guess there's a chance.
Yeah.
I didn't think the 49ers had it. It just didn't feel like they're not going to win this game.
No,
until they did.
And I can tell you that was certainly in the mood. That miss, and by the way, you know, two rookie kickers.
Yeah.
Trying to decide an incredibly important game or help decide it. But that miss absolutely lit the stadium on fire. It was a crazy moment because I think people started to think, you know, we actually have Brock.
Yeah.
And we have this offense. And
yeah.
Kittle's still on the field. Like,
right.
They could probably go down and this could actually happen.
Oh, yeah.
This
at that point, it's like, well, that's doable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they had put themselves in a position where only a touchdown would do. So it had to be that. And I think just if you look at how the 49ers – with Deebo Samuel going out, and if you look at how the 49ers then sort of adjust, I mean, a part of what happened on Saturday was that they built a game plan around a guy who got knocked out in the first quarter of the game. And so you're trying to adjust your game plan on the fly, and it allows, you know, the Packers to sort of double up or triple up on a Kittle and force someone else. McCaffrey runs for almost 100 and catches 7 balls. That's another person that you have, and that's what I mean. I don't know if Samuel will play. It's probably 50-50. Maybe tomorrow they'll get him on the field and see.
What's the problem, do you think? I know you haven't examined him, but they do x-rays. Okay, there's no fracture. All right. I mean, easy for me to say, but it's freaking football.
Yeah.
And you're trying to get the Super Bowl. So what possibly could be like an AC joint, a bad sprain where he can't literally move his shoulder? What would prevent him from playing?
I don't know the answer. I mean,
I'll get him some Toradol if that's what they need.
I got a feeling they can get that.
That's what I would think.
Here's what I thought, and I kind of still think. I thought that under certain circumstances, they probably could have gotten him back in the game. I believe that Shanahan's calculus was, I think we beat this team without him. Let's see if we can get him ready for the championship game and see if we can't beat these guys without him. It's a crazy risk. But with that offense, I get it. It's like, we have other options. We can still move the ball down the field. And they did, just barely, to win the game. It's a recurrence of an existing injury. That's about the only other thing I know. He missed time earlier this year with the same shoulder, same area.
But it was fractured.
Yeah.
And now supposedly, and I know sometimes a fracture, you have to x-ray it a couple times before you actually find it.
That's right.
Yeah.
It's possible that first reading, I don't know what the medical reports actually show.
The preliminary numbers. No fracture. Yeah.
Okay. Well, maybe. But, I mean, are you sure there's not some other structural damage in there? There could be. And like you said, it could be something like a capsule that would take an MRI to really spot. And maybe they're not looking right now.
Yeah.
I don't know. It didn't show up. The x-ray says no problem.
Of course, we x-rayed his foot, but we didn't find anything.
Jason. He'll be all right. But yeah, that's it. I think that that's really, I thought that might have been the calculus on Saturday. Just, you know what? Get him off the field. Let's see if we can't just win this game.
339-1140, 1-800-920-1140. Tin joins us on Sacktown Sports. Hello, Tin. What's up?
Hi, Whitey. Hey, Mark. Thanks for filling in for Kyle Draper.
Oh, sure. Well, it's my pleasure. Thank you.
And I heard earlier in the show that you are a baseball guru. Well, I have so much respect for the sport of baseball. I never played it growing up, but had a friend, you know, to play AA, AAA. And I think getting involved in that sport at a young age, man, it just turns your mechanics on like so quick. Like you have to be so quick on reaction when you're waiting for the ball, fastball, screwball. So, yeah, I think, you know, if I ever had the kid one day, man, I might have to get him into some baseball, even though I'm more of a football, basketball guy myself.
Yeah, good luck, Tin.
Totally kids, appreciate that.
Kids hate baseball, though. Don't they?
They really don't. They hate standing around doing nothing.
And, right.
You know,
that's what I said.
Baseball at the lower levels isn't like that, right? I mean, baseball at the lower levels is get back in the box. We're pitching again, you know. And I think that MLB is on – they're on the right track. They're still trying to figure out, does a clock really matter that much? Yeah, it turns out it actually does. Does it change the game? Not too much.
Yeah,
it
for those who don't know, and he's modest, he wants to say Mark's son is a major league infielder for the Detroit Tigers. So he well, – and he – that's in spite of the fact that you coached him through many of his early years.
And birthed him, or helped. Yeah, despite all that, he's succeeding professionally. But I do think it's interesting, you know, Joe Mauer goes in the Hall of Fame today. He was a three-sport guy. Todd Helton, three-sport guy. There's a lot to be said for what each sport can give a young kid. In addition to just the fun of trying different sports.
Yeah.
And they all have their own really particular skill sets.
In general, you're going to avoid some of the repetitive stress injuries if you're playing other sports too, right?
The numbers are undeniable. Yeah. It's absolutely true that you will experience far higher rates of repetitive stress injury. Serious injury, by the way, not just, it hurts. By being the kid whose parents jam them into one sport year round.
Mm-hmm.
It's not for everybody, but I think that the other part of it is just kids like to play different games.
Mitch
Let them
from,
play different games.
Yes. Mitch from New Jersey is up next year. Now batting Mitch. Hello, Mitch. What's up?
How's it going?
Good.
How's it going, Mark? Whitey?
Yeah.
Hey, Mitch.
Let me tell you, if the Lions win this game, be big Gibson, it'd be like, you know, Harrison Barnes scoring 32 and more than double his output. I don't expect that. The 49ers are pretty deep. If you don't have Debo, you still got Ayuk. Jennings is pretty tough, and you got Kittle there, which you have two good running backs.
Yeah, but Detroit's legit, Mitch, don't you think?
Yeah, I know. It's a good story. Goff is the reason why he was there. No one picking that draft. He's like five times better than Wentz. The good running backs, glory receiver, my USC boy, Brown, good tight end. Yeah, it's going to be a good game. But it's like, I don't know, I don't want to compare to the King games last night. That was some game. Sabonis, because he's such a workhorse, and Sabonis, you know, he woke up, with a coming out party for Mr. Bonus there. But anyway, you know, I'm a Bonus hater. But anyway, it's going to be a great game, great games this weekend.
Yeah,
all right,
absolutely.
Thank you. That's even Mitch is a Barnes hater.
Yeah.
He has to say he had a great game last night.
Yeah.
How about that?
But he doesn't expect it to recur.
One more here. Ashley joining us, Sacktown Sports. Hello, Ashley. How are you?
Doing all right. Yourself?
Good, good, good. What can we do for you?
Not much. This is going to be a little bit of a different topic than football or the baseball. But I was actually calling in wanting to talk Kings real quick.
Yeah.
Yeah. That game last night, so good to end that four-game skid. That four-game losing streak felt like it went on for, like, 20 months. I mean, I know it didn't, but, like, it just felt like it never ended. And I was glad to see the Kings come out with the energy that they did. And not only that, but to see us come on top without any of our star players really having a great game. Sure, Domas had a really good game, but... I mean, in terms of scoring, he was a little off. De'Aaron was off. And it was good to see the Kings just kind of have one of those group wins that we had last year.
Yeah, thank you, Ashley. I think that's a great point. Last night I was thinking first half it seemed like, all right, the guys who normally shoot, you're not shooting tonight. It's other people are shooting night. And to your point, it is. I mean, when you have balanced scoring like that, you're just in general a tougher team to defend.
Of course. And the second unit was the same. I mean, there were points coming in.
Oh, here comes Kreidler talking about his guy, Sasha again.
Sasha, yeah. Come on.
You and Emmy on the chat. She loves Sasha.
Turn him loose. Let's go.
Turn him loose?
Yeah, let's go. Shots from all over.
Trade Harrison Barnes. Maybe you can start your boy, Sasha.
Sasha pulling up from the logo.
Yeah. He wouldn't be afraid. He's not afraid.
He could probably make
that. He probably could make that shot.
Yeah.
But truly, yeah, the bench was extremely, not just productive, but balanced. And anytime you've got that, you're a tougher team to defend anyway. But it's noteworthy. And Ashley mentioned it. On a night when Fox continues to be just a little bit off his game, it's reassuring to beat a team you're supposed to beat with other people just stepping up and taking some of the load. And Harrison Barnes was early in that game, clear that it was a night where you should feed him, and they did.
What's the latest trade talk-wise around the NBA? We've got that for you next year. Drive Guys, Sactown Sports.
The Drive Guys, live and local. Every afternoon, Monday through Friday on Sactown Sports.
Mark Kreidler is in with us today. Kyle Draper will be back tomorrow. Is there kind of a double standard at work, Kreidler, when it comes to sports fans and PEDs? Because we know we had the Hall of Fame voting coming out today, those who were elected. And I don't know that PEDs had an impact on any of these guys' careers with Maurer and Helton and Beltre. But we also had word today that Tristan Thompson's suspended 25 games for PED use. And it just seems that when it's football or basketball, it's like people don't even know. They barely even notice it. And it's fine. I don't really care, but I just think it's curious.
Yeah.
It does seem less, people get less upset than they used to in baseball. But still in baseball, it's a big thing, right?
It is for a couple of reasons. One is that sort of the biggest moment of scandal was magnified times, you know, whatever, when Mark McGwire's going past all-time home run records. And by the way, Sammy Sosa right on his tail.
Yeah.
And then Barry Bonds makes what is legitimately going to always be considered history. But the story was about almost everything but his actual achievement, which I can honestly say now that I spent a lot more time around baseball than I had been, partly because of Ryan, I just know that every other hitter is in love with the way what Bonds knows about hitting is a lot. Whether he was ever going to be a good hitting coach, I don't know. But his story was consumed by this scandal. And so now, even now, this many years later, you still have at least once a year a flashpoint around performance-enhancing drug use in the sport. Whereas in football, it's like, yeah, he got popped.
Wink, wink.
That's a shame.
Yeah.
And in the NBA, it's like, yeah, he's going away for a couple of weeks. But we're not going to talk about it. You know, it was often said that the worst thing that the International Olympic Committee ever did was decide to publicize and announce each positive drug test.
Yeah.
The IOC, for all its other faults, was actually trying to be transparent. What it did was just create this weird perception that all Olympic athletes were cheaters. Because that every time there was a positive test, they would announce the result. So part of it is sort of where in its history baseball's scandalous moments occurred. And they occurred in really huge moments.
Mm-hmm. And it's just
hard to get past it.
I think the leagues know now it's really bad for business. We don't want guys to take PEDs, but I mean, they have to announce it when something like that happens. But I don't think they're hoping to catch anybody. It's not like, oh, we're going to get these guys. Like, oh, let's hope we don't have to deal with this. It's bad for business.
Haven't seen a lot of it lately at Major League Baseball.
Right.
Sort of interesting subtopic is that minor league players still get popped all the time. And the testing is fairly rigorous in the minors, but also you think about the numbers that are coming into the system and how many players are desperately trying to climb from one rung to the next rung.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's not out of the question. But you don't read about that stuff because, you know, on any sports fan's radar, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, and I don't mean to, you know, drive us back down into that rabbit hole about what's right, what's wrong, and blah, blah, blah. I just think it's curious that in baseball, and it was a while ago, people would get so – it was such a big story.
Yeah.
And now, like, the Tristan Thompson thing, somebody mentioned it on the chat, and I'd read that today. And I was like, oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah.
It's a play on now.
Yeah, it is a play on, and I think, you know, sports have each had their own sort of huge moments that they had to deal with. The NBA, and now we're going way back, but the NBA had a drug problem, not performance-enhancing drug problem, a drug problem that burst out into the open and became a thing.
And baseball did too at a time.
Of course it did. The NFL obviously had a domestic violence problem, is the wrong way to put it, but it had an image problem that was directly related to legitimate domestic violence issues. And that's one of those things that you have to start figuring out. How are you going to address it? How are you, you know, I mean, the Ray Rice story blew the league wide open because there was video. And so each league in its time is going to deal with a truly scandalous little period. Baseball's just got dragged out partly because it was magnified so much.
Mm-hmm. And the perception now is that it's clean, right? I think either it's that or people just don't care.
Well, I mean, I guess, yeah. I mean, from the perspective of PED use, yeah, I think that's the perception. It's like baseball addressed it. The testing is very rigorous, and they never seem to announce anything. So it must be okay.
There you go. There you go. The Lakers haven't announced anything yet, but we do have this today from Dave McMiniman. Says the Lakers, their plan here, they're at the deadline, is to go out and get a bona fide star. So what the Lakers are hoping to do, according to this report, is trade some draft picks, maybe three draft picks, with some players already on the current roster to land either Trae Young or Donovan Mitchell of the Cavaliers. Good luck, Lakers. I don't think they're going to pull it off. And if they do, I don't think it's going to work.
I don't think they would pull it off if they completed one of those trades. Like, if you want to add Trae Young to your defense? I don't think you do.
He's a star, Cryde. You know that. You're from Oklahoma. He's a superstar.
I actually think Donovan Mitchell's kind of a star, but I don't think Trae Young is exactly. I know he's well known, he's well paid, but, you know, I'm not sure he's a difference maker on a team that's trying to get over such a, like, the Lakers bar is not set where the Kings are. I don't care what the records are right now. The Lakers are trying to win a championship before LeBron leaves, period. That's the goal. That's what they're built around. So I actually think they'd be more inclined to take the equivalent of a wild three. I really do think they'll jack up some pretty strange trade attempt here at some point.
Are you comfy right now? You're three ahead of them. Kings seventh as we speak, Lakers ninth, but
no,
they're looking to.
Not at all. No.
You know, the Warriors are down there 12th. They may decide that's not our year, or they may decide let's do something, make a run. So the Kings are sitting there trying to figure out how to get better at the deadline. They're not the only team looking to do that in the West.
No, they're not. And we're going to find out in the next couple of weeks that other teams in the West are going to get better right in front of them. And the question is whether the Kings can actually put together a deal that improves their team, not just a move to satisfy people to say make a move. And those are tricky, man. They're hard to come by, especially when you like your young core and you don't want to blow things up.
I like when the Kings play the Warriors, which is coming up Thursday. It gets feisty.
Yeah, it does. And it should.
Yeah. Thank you very much for coming in, Mark Cryde.
My pleasure. Yeah, thanks for having me.
We have all enjoyed it. Thank you, Kyle. Thank you for being with us today. Stick around. We've got, what do we have coming up, Kyle?
CBS Sports Radio.
Are you kidding me? CBS Sports Radio is next.
I could have told you that.
Right here on Sactown Sports.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.